You're listening to Real Talk, and we're your hosts. I'm Colin Ritter.
I'm Peter Lewis.
And this week, our theme is horror. So we're going to talk about some of our favorite horror films, some of our favorite horror franchises. We're also going to talk about the state of the industry as far as horror films are concerned, and what we think the future of horror films looks like in Hollywood. So to start us off, Peter, give us a little rundown of some of maybe your favorite horror films or horror franchises and why you love them.
Okay. I think I'll start with the franchises because that's the easy one.
Fair enough.
I'm pro Friday the 13th and the Universal monster movies from the 20s to 60s.
Mm-hmm.
I'll focus more on Friday the 13th because that's what always got me. I think it's just, it definitely falls in the category of so bad it's good.
Oh, yeah.
But I think it does it in actually a smart way.
Yeah.
I would somewhat debate. Like every now and then there's like a hint of like good thought process putting into the movie.
Yeah.
But then they know this is a popcorn film. They know what they're doing.
Of course.
Which I always appreciated. And, you know, slasher films, you know.
You gotta love them.
You're in it for the creativity.
Absolutely.
Like, you might not be condoning, you know, the actions, but let's be real. You know why you like it.
Exactly.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. It does. And, like, take Friday the 13th, for instance, you know. You have the buildup of part one, you know, where you see the mother. And then you have part two. And then finally in part three, you have, you know, this really creative approach to try to make a 3D film, which was, you know, pretty creative for the time. It kind of failed miserably as far as 3D technology is concerned, obviously when compared to now, but it's a different time, obviously. But that you know, that's the part three is when you first see the mask, you know, that kind of builds the character that Jason becomes, you know, and then obviously.
It's just fun to go back to because, you know,
yeah.
I think they just put it on him because, you know. In the first one, obviously, it was Pamela Voorhees.
Of course.
As the killer. Two is when we introduced Jason, but he has the pillowcase on his
exactly.
head.
Exactly.
Three, they decided, let's try a hockey mask. And, you know, it's funny to think, like, how iconic that
exactly.
became.
Exactly. And you know, were they, it makes you wonder, were they thinking that? Did they realize that putting the hockey mask on this killer was going to be so famous? Because, as you mentioned, it is. I know as a kid, hockey masks scared the crap out of me. And I didn't really know why they scared me so much. I mean, obviously, after seeing the movies, that explains it more. But as a kid, seeing a hockey mask was just scary after seeing Friday the 13th, you know?
See, I think I first saw Friday the 13th when I was six. So mm-hmm. It probably explains a lot about me. But it's one of those weird things. It never scared me. For some reason, just never did. I was always, like, just entertained by just how ridiculous it was. But it's interesting to say, like, where they thought I was going to go. Because I think... Clearly, when you watch the first one, the original from 1980,
yeah.
I think they thought they were onto something.
Yeah.
I kind of get that feel. Like, there were some good shots. There were some mm-hmm. good setups. It just, you know, somewhat is riddled in its own new created cliches.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's funny. Like, now we get to Jason X, 2002, I believe. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they just put him in space in the future. It's ridiculous.
Absolutely ridiculous. It kind of makes you sad in a way because I feel like there was, as you mentioned, you know, it's a slasher film. It's a good popcorn film. You know, it's simply for entertainment, of course. You know, that's what movies are for, right? But obviously, you know, some movies can really speak to people. But, you know, in this instance, the slasher film, it's for entertainment. It's a popcorn movie, like you said.
It is.
And I felt like it could have gone so many places, but I think they took it too far. I mean, there's no doubt about it.
Oh,
they took it way too far.
I think they went too far when they... took Jason to Manhattan.
Oh my gosh.
And actually did not commit to being in Manhattan for the actual movie.
I know.
Yeah.
That is a strange one. That, I mean, almost as strange as Jason X in space. And I, like I mentioned, I think they could have done so many amazing things with that storyline, and they did. You know, I mean, I still love the films.
Oh,
but
yeah.
How do you feel about the remake of Friday the 13th?
The 2009 one.
Yeah.
It was interesting. Say that. I didn't enjoy it. I didn't hate it. I was able to appreciate it for what it was. Because,
mm-hmm.
I mean, again, there's that bias of, you know, I've loved the series so much
of
that
course.
I'm probably going to accept whatever you do with it, no matter how it turns out. I'll find, like, some weird way to like it.
Yeah.
But just overall, I was like, you know, they tried. It could have gone places.
Yeah.
But I just don't think, you know, the 80s slasher film is translated too well into the modern horror genre.
You know, I agree. I can agree with that. But kind of like what you said, I didn't hate it.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely didn't hate it, but at the same time, I wasn't in love with it. You know, I enjoyed the film, And it was an interesting take. I thought it was an interesting take to try to bring back that genre, kind of like you mentioned. But as you mentioned, it doesn't necessarily fit to what people are looking for now. They like to look back to those 80s films and those 70s and 80s slasher films to kind of have that bit of nostalgia. And I guess I don't feel like that nostalgia was there for the remake for me. I don't know about for you. But
it's hard to recreate what worked in past decades
exactly into
now, because, you know, we love the 80s for reasons. But we love, you know, the modern films
exactly for
different reasons. And, you know, it's always fun to, like, pay homage to it. But at the same time, it's like, if you try to modernize something that worked in the 80s, it's just...
It's not
going
to work.
Awkward.
It is.
It's what most remakes and reboots are.
Of course.
In a sense. So, Colin, what was your favorite franchise? Because we've gotten on the Friday the 13th bandwagon pretty fast.
You know, I think my favorite franchise is probably yours. As a matter of fact, I know it is your favorite franchise as well. I'm a big fan of Halloween. And I know that you are as well. I think it's brilliant, you know, this idea of a masked killer whom you don't know a whole lot about. You don't know why he is the way he is, and, you know, not to mention some very iconic shots in the first film that don't get talked about a lot. And, you know, you and I were both talking about this morning, but the long shot, you know, the long continuous shot at the beginning of the original Halloween was brilliant, and I don't think he gets the credit. You know, I think there were so many tools that were used in the makings of the original Halloween films that made them great. And to me, as a kid, I personally found the Halloween films to be more frightening than Friday the 13th.
Oh, absolutely.
Because, you know, it brings it into a town. You don't have to be at this lakeside cabin resort sort of thing, you know, a camp. It brings it into a small town, and then it brings it into your home. And for me, that's really scary. And you have sort of that quote-unquote character development for Michael Myers, but at the same time, you don't. You know, like I mentioned, it's kind of a mystery, and I think that, to me, makes it more frightening.
Oh, absolutely. The original film, I'm just going to focus on that because I have a bit to say about the sequels and the future.
But oh, yeah.
Halloween is still somewhat scares me to this day.
Agreed.
I think it's just John Carpenter, when he was at his A game in horror, he was a genius. I don't think there's any other way to put that. What he did with that film was very smart in how he used, you know, the music, the editing, the lighting to establish a mood.
Absolutely.
And people always say, you know, it spawned the slasher genre. And in a way, I can see the point, but overall, when we talk about blood, you know, just the blood and gore and the body count, it really didn't because it was so subtle.
It was.
I mean, I don't think more than 10 people die in that movie.
I know.
At the hands of Michael Myers.
You make a really good point. So look at the Friday, now we're going to just, you know, compare the two.
Yeah.
Look at Friday the 13th. Look at the deaths in Friday the 13th. And then look at the deaths at Halloween. It has this, I guess, level of realism, if you can put realism into a slasher film category. But I know, as you mentioned, you know, you don't believe Halloween truly fits into the definition of being a slasher film.
I would say so, because, like I said, John Carpenter really utilized and the scenes where he could have utilized it, he had the lighting so dark to, like, establish the mood, which is what I think worked for that horror movie. Mm-hmm. The atmosphere of it still holds up to this day. The scene where Michael Myers, well, the fun part about Halloween was they never said Michael Myers. That was the future film.
Exactly.
They just referred to him as, I think, the shape in the script.
Exactly,
never,
yeah.
Just talk. I think just the boogeyman was the proper term for the movie.
Of course.
But he puts, the character's name was Bob.
Mm-hmm.
It's that famous scene where he stabs him to the wall, and you see the camera go back. You just have Michael Myers, like, you know, turn his head. It's like, that establishes so much more.
Absolutely.
That's
terrifying.
It really is. And just how they, because what made the Halloween franchise could have been so good was John Carpenter's original idea was to have it as an anthology of films, where each film was a different story.
Yeah.
And everybody knows about Halloween 3, Season of the Witch.
Which I loved.
Oh, it's a great film. But it got there to an awkward point because Halloween 2 was a sequel to Halloween, which didn't need to happen.
Exactly. And people were waiting for Michael Myers. They're like, okay, this is Halloween. This is the third Halloween film. Where's Michael Myers? And correct me if I'm wrong, it upset people.
Oh, yeah. Because I think they were, Halloween 3 happened in 83, 84, I think, or 82, I'm sorry. And by then, we were starting to see these slasher films develop into franchises. Like Friday the 13th was 80, 81 was the second one. I think the third one was held off till 1983. But still, you know, we were starting to see franchises of these slasher films be born. I think that's what people expected. But we never really need Halloween 2 to be a Michael Myers sequel. Because Halloween, the way it ends with, like, you know, it made the point that evil still exists. I think that's what they were... There was never supposed to be anything more to these characters other than establishing, like, a meaning to it.
Yeah.
Which is what Halloween 3 has as well. You know, it's like just the evils of marketing is, like, in the... In the meaning for a way.
Yeah. Well, I guess my next question for you is, because I know how you feel about certain remakes.
Yeah.
How do you feel about the Halloween, the Rob Zombie Halloween remakes?
We'll go on record and say I love Rob Zombie. I think he's a brilliant filmmaker and musician. But you talk about dropping the ball on a film. Yeah. That's what he did here, unfortunately. Because what made Halloween great in that opening shot was it seems so strange that this kid we don't know about looks, you know, it's like the stereotype we always talk about, especially in the news, like, you know, oh, the kid grew up in the middle-class house. All of a sudden, he does his horrendous thing.
Yeah.
It's like there's so much mystery to it, and they never explained it. So you're always wondering, like, ooh, what's wrong with this kid?
I agree.
And then we get the remake where, okay, he's in a rundown house. The dad's the alcoholic. The mother's the stripper. The family doesn't like him. He's strange to begin with. Like, it's a cop-out.
Yeah, it was too much. And I know that you love character development, but I would say you agree. It was too much character development, and it made the character less scary.
That's the problem. Like, what made Michael Myers great in Halloween 1 was we didn't even know his name was Michael Myers.
Exactly.
It was such a weird thing. It's just like, oh, this just random person out of nowhere is, you know, trying to kill this one person and her friends. Where Halloween is just, you know, it's, like you said, too much character development, but in doing so, it's not good character development. It's just cheap. Like, we know what you're trying to do here, and it's like, we know it's going to happen. I'm not involved in this. That was my biggest problem. Yeah.
I think another thing for me is the fact that in the remake, and this may seem kind of silly, but you can actually put a face to the character of Michael Myers. And for me, that kind of separates the two, and as I mentioned, makes it less terrifying. Where, as you mentioned, in the original Halloween, it's this whole mystery. So this fact that, as you mentioned, you have this kid who lives through this really rough upbringing, and you kind of get to know the kid as a child and then see him as he's growing up, for me, that took me out of it. Now, I will say I have seen the remakes multiple times and enjoy watching them, but for me, I could say, I mean, obviously, it's clearly a remake of Halloween, but maybe a standalone film, perhaps, but I think it's hard to take something that's so iconic and try to give you too much information. It's like throwing way too much information at you at once, and it takes you out of the true story, I think.
I think the biggest problem with that specific remake of Halloween was that after Halloween 3, we went back to Michael Myers and had, I think, about 6 more films with the character, and we started to, like, in my opinion, we started to ruin the mystique that was around him in the first film.
I agree.
Like, we put too much meaning on, like, oh, he's going after his family, where... As in the first one, you just believe this guy could be going after anybody.
Anybody, yeah.
It's like, just stay away from the Strodes and you're perfect for the night.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you have no mystery left in that character other than, you know, just turn him into Jason Voorhees, which Jason can be Jason because we never really put too much on him besides the first movie. But Halloween, it was done in such a better way that by just diluting this character and trying to remake it, like, we don't care anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And you put this spin on, which is, in fairness to Rob Zombie, that's, I think, the only way you could have handled that spin at that point. But still, it's just like, why should we care?
Exactly. I agree. And, you know, kind of as we've talked, remakes definitely just don't always work for classic films. So if you're a horror filmmaker, take a second look before you decide to remake a classic. So I think next we can talk about, you know, what I and I think a lot of people would consider the father of horror and one of the greatest minds that not only the horror genre, but filmmaking has ever known, Alfred Hitchcock.
Absolutely.
What's your favorite Hitchcock movie and why? Because I know we briefly talked about this, and I believe you've gone down by saying that this is one of the best horror films in history.
Oh, yeah. Psycho, for sure, is just how Hitchcock's talent was character development and establishing setting.
Absolutely.
I think those were his two biggest things. Of course, people say other things, but for me, those are the two big things he did well on. And this film, he just brings it all together in such a good way to develop this character and this whole setting that he's in.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Then he had a talent, rather, of making you afraid of everyday sort of life, everyday sort of things. And I think that's a good, that's a very good talent to have when you can let the fear from a film like that or from any of his films kind of intrude your everyday life and kind of make you just afraid in general about such menial things.
In a way, it was Halloween before we knew what Halloween
exactly
was. You know, this everyday, like you said, the everyday problem that you wouldn't think anything would happen to, and then you introduce that problem, and now you're involved in just this really weird thing that you probably think you wouldn't like to be involved in, but you're just can't help stop watching this.
Absolutely. I completely agree. Now, as far as, we haven't really talked about this, but, and I don't even know if you have any, but what would be some of your least favorite, if you have any, horror films from any time period? It doesn't have to be now. It doesn't have to be a certain, you know, genre or time period, rather. What would be some of your least favorite and why, if you have any?
Okay. I think we already touched on the Halloween sequels.
Yeah.
2, 4, 5, 6, and all those. Just didn't think they were necessary, and they just ruined the main film. But other than that, just, you know, it's a genre I can't say that. Here's what I'll say. When I was younger, it was probably my favorite genre. But now it's clearly fallen off the the cliff for me, even though there have been some good films that have come out recently that we'll talk about.
Mm-hmm.
I just got to say it's one of those, it's a weird franchise for me where I'm just, genre, sorry, where if something's just bad, I'm just like, all right.
Yeah.
I can't really say I don't hate any horror films. I might dislike them, of course.
Yeah.
I just can't think of like any that just truly made me, you know, not happy with the film, if that makes sense.
Well, yeah, that makes complete sense. So I guess this would lead me to ask this. So, you know, The Exorcist is, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of people say that's one of the best horror films, one of the scariest horror films ever made. So I know you're aware of this. There was like a craze for a while, and it still sort of exists, where you have a lot of filmmakers remaking their own versions of these different, you know, Exorcist-style films where you have a character that is overtaken by a demon, and you have sort of this family sob story that typically ends in this, you know, happy ending, and then everything's good and life goes back to normal.
Yeah.
How do you think that that sort of storyline, because, you know, that's not really a slasher film. It's not, it's almost like a subcategory of the genre of horror, just like slasher films are. How do you think that was handled when you compare some of the newer exorcism films to like the original Exorcist?
Hollywood doesn't really have the courage to end a film on a sour note.
Yeah.
I've noticed like that's the cliche. Everything has to have the happy ending. So I somewhat expect that, but I think horror is much more effective when, you know, you have that empty feeling inside, like how Psycho ends, how Halloween ends, where it's like, you know, this wasn't resolved. You're still not safe, which is a much better thing to do. But the problem with, you know, this whole possession demon type thing is it's kind of begging to be ended on, you know, you got rid of the demon.
Yeah.
It's one of those stories that, like, you don't have to, of course, end it that way. But it just begs to. It's hard to, like, get away from that, you know, writing mishap of just, you know, going for the easy route.
Yeah, that's a good point. It kind of reminds me, you know, and this movie is not directly, you know, an exorcism movie, but A Haunting in Connecticut. You've seen that film.
Oh,
have
yeah.
you? So yeah. It's sort of that sort of thing. You know, you have a film that it truly terrified me. The first time I saw it, and even now, I mean, it just gives me the chills. You know, you have this family who's whose kid is battling an illness. They move to a new town, move into a new home. They find out that the home, if you haven't seen it, sorry for the spoilers, but they find out that the home was a funeral home and that there's a mortuary in the basement and that this home is very haunted because, I mean, the entire framework of the home happens to be dead bodies, essentially. Now, the ending is kind of like we just described. It's very happy and everything gets resolved and then they march off into the sunset.
And again, I can, you know, be cliche and say, oh, Hollywood's just lazy.
Yeah.
But I think just, you know, you want to end your stories on a upbeat note.
Yeah.
Especially when you have your characters go through so much. It's really rare to, you know, see the writer or director just give in and say, you know what, let's not end it that way.
Yeah.
I think a few years back I saw Sinister.
Mm-hmm.
Not impressive by any standards, in my opinion. But it actually ended on the note where, you know, the family that was victimized did not survive.
Yeah.
And I think that was a very interesting, it actually kind of surprised me. I was like, wow, they actually
yeah.
went for that route.
It kind of leaves you thinking, you know, like you said, you leave the theater or if you're watching at home, you finish watching the film and you continue to think about it. I think if you have a film that has the full, resolves itself, that kind of leaves a cutoff for you to continue thinking about the film. And I think a good movie, and I don't know if you agree, but I think a good movie keeps you thinking about it for a long time thereafter.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
Because I think 2 years ago, the Poltergeist remake came out.
Yeah.
I got dragged into seeing that. And it was funny because a week after I saw it, I realized I completely forgot I watched it, even though I never checked out watching the movie.
Yeah.
Didn't enjoy it, of course. But I think just that's the worst thing a film can do. Like, you know, I didn't like Batman vs. Superman, but I can talk to you for days about how I didn't like it.
Exactly.
It left an impression on me.
Exactly.
And that's, I think...
But not a good...
It's a bad impression.
Yeah.
But it's an impression nonetheless. Like, to completely forget about a film that you sat through, that's the worst.
Exactly. And that's happened to me time and time again. But like you said, you know, good filmmaking will leave you thinking about it. You know, I mean, this isn't a horror film, but La La Land. I continued to think about that film for the rest of the night, for the rest of the next day, until I went back into the theater and saw it again because I couldn't stop thinking about it.
Exactly. About it.
Exactly. And that's what good filmmaking should do. And I think that there is a place for that in the horror genre. As a matter of fact, I think in order to have great horror films, you have to have that. And kind of like what you said, you know, Rob Zombie, you have great respect for him. I mean, look what he did with House of 1,000 Corpses, you know. Those movies just leave you thinking, and they make you so uncomfortable, but that's honestly what make them great.
I think that's the thing that Hollywood needs to realize about horror. Just because it's horror does not mean it has to scare you.
Yeah.
Horror includes thriller, suspense,
yes.
You know, all those types of things. Psychological, like, you know, in The Shining, of course.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have to, like, you know, leave you up at night not wanting to go to bed because you're too scared to.
Yeah.
But if it can make you start thinking, I think that's what the power of horror films is, to make
yeah.
you think about things that you wouldn't normally think about.
Of course.
Like, am I a sick person because I love Friday the 13th so much? Maybe, maybe not.
Maybe, maybe not.
Who knows?
Well, speaking, you mentioned a more recent horror film. What do you think the industry looks like right now? Because, I mean, we're in 2017 now, and I personally don't think that horror films have that same grasp that they did back in the 80s. You don't have that same, maybe I don't want to say ideology, but you don't have that same sort of approach to horror filmmaking, you know, where you have these very original stories like Friday the 13th, Halloween, you know, Nightmare on Elm Street, and then they continue to develop those films for, I don't know, 10 years, and
yeah.
then 15 to 20 years later, they make a remake. You know, so what do you think the industry looks like right now, or where do you think it's going?
A lot of the... We've moved away from slasher films to what's called splatter films.
Yeah.
And if you've seen Saw, you know what I'm talking about. It's just endless blood and gore.
Yeah.
And that's not scary.
It doesn't work for me.
Psychological or suspense. It's just, you know, you're just playing with too much blood and
yeah.
makeup, you know.
Exactly.
And that's my thing. There are some films that I have seen the past few years that are classified as horror films that honestly I would say are perfect.
Yeah.
It Follows from 2014 was definitely one
mm-hmm.
because it is a little scary, but it's more of just like the psychological and suspense of it because you have no
yeah.
idea what's going on for most of the movie.
Yeah.
And it just builds up so well.
Yeah. I agree. How do you feel about Insidious, the original Insidious film, or like The Conjuring, you know, those more modern films? How do you feel about those as far as the genre concerned? Do you think it stays true to what the genre should be, or did it kind of pull you out of it?
I did not see Insidious, but I did see Conjuring.
Yeah.
I will say, I do see what you're saying on Conjuring.
Yeah.
About showing that horror still has life in it, in how we, you know, market films.
Yeah.
Because it was loosely based on...
Ed and Lorraine Warren.
Thank
yeah.
you. Thank
yeah.
you. And I think, you know, of course, it strives away from it for, you know, a film's sake and story's
yeah,
sake.
Of course.
But, you know, it's two different mediums, so it's understandable. But it did work. It did work.
I agree. I thought that The Conjuring was terrifying. I truly thought it was terrifying because, and now I don't know if this is true for you, but for me, when you have a horror film that connects this idea of based on a true story, that freaks me out. It does and always has. Like, kind of like the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, but which we can touch on here in a second. Mm-hmm. But The Conjuring worked for me. I thought the score was incredible because to me, it was like a throwback. I was like, gosh, I'm watching this and we have like the music buildup. You have mood setting. And I thought that was beautiful. I mean, it's a horror film, so I mean, how beautiful can it be? But from a filmmaking standpoint, I thought it was beautiful and making me... you know, putting me on the edge of my seat and then truly scaring me, to be honest.
That's one of my favorite things to look at in horror films, the sound and music.
Yeah.
Because if that's truly effective, it ups your movie
yeah.
so much. Like, I hate to go back to Halloween again. Imagine that movie without the music.
Near as scary.
I still think I would be a little involved in it, but it just sets the perfect mood.
It absolutely does. And that goes to show the importance of good composition in filmmaking.
Especially of horror, because, you know, horror is all about, you know, that you got to believe in the atmosphere
absolutely.
Of the movie. Because if you're not, you're just going to sit there like me and Poltergeist just thinking, well, here we go again.
Exactly. And what sets good atmosphere is music.
Yep.
You can leave, a movie house and you're humming different tunes you heard in the movie. I mean, probably not as much for a horror film, but other genres, that's the case. So, I mean, yeah, as you mentioned, very impactful, can really change the story and change the entire atmosphere of the film. Now, to go back, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, how do you feel about that? You know, the originals based on the countless remakes that have been done.
I can't even count how many times they remade that. I'm trying to think. I'll start with the original, of course.
Yeah.
The original is truly great.
Incredible, yeah.
I mean, I still think, you know, because I remember when reading about when it came out, it was like one of the most controversial films in a long time to
yeah.
make, because 1974, you know, this was still unheard of.
Yeah.
This is before we got too delusional to slasher films. But Toby Huber, I mean, he was just very smart in mm-hmm. how he handled that film, because, you know, that could have gotten out of hand really fast. He could have focused too much on the murder.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there is murder in that movie, of course. But it just focuses more on the aspect of the family of Leatherface.
Yeah.
And that's where you get the best story.
I agree.
In my opinion.
I agree. And kind of, as I mentioned earlier, I hinted at, you know, the fact that, you know, you hear that based on a true story, and that really frightens me. And then, you know, the story of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre and Leatherface, I believe, was loosely based on Ed Gein. Correct me if I'm
yes,
wrong.
Yes.
Which actually did not take place in Texas. But I don't believe it did.
There was something. It was absolutely Ed Gein was the inspiration for Leatherface. There was something that happened in Texas. I don't think it was. I think there was something about cannibalism, but I
yeah,
don't think.
Yeah, so it was like a blending of two different true stories that kind of, you know, built the concept for the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. But they market it as based on a true event, which makes it more scary.
But what's interesting about when you advertise, you know, based on true events, like most of the time, it's, you know, it's the film, the medium film needs different, you know, things to work with. So you have to like make some sacrifices or add some things that weren't in there.
Yeah.
Like Haunting Connecticut. I've read about the actual events, and, you know, the film version and the real version are two separate things.
Of course. Yeah. As we mentioned, you know, it has to be heightened for Hollywood.
Yeah. And again, same, like we just said about Texas Chainsaw Massacre, there wasn't actually a Leatherface family.
Yeah.
But it's how it goes about, like, do you believe that this could have happened? And I would say, yes,
yeah,
because of how you handle it. Haunting Connecticut, like, not really.
Yeah.
But with Texas Chainsaw Massacre, it felt real, and that was a huge success.
I agree. It worked, obviously, you know, because they're still trying to remake these films.
Yeah.
Now, before we wrap up, where would you like to see, I know we briefly touched on it, but where would you like to see the future of this genre within the industry go? Where would you like to see it go from here?
I would like them to... One of my favorite periods of film was German Expressionism in the 1920s, because
mm-hmm.
that's where I think my absolute favorite horror film, besides Psycho, it's called The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari. It's a silent film from 1920, and it was just so effective in how it, you know, used shadows, images, lighting. That's what I think you should really be starting to focus on. Like I think I said earlier, horror does not mean you have to be scared.
Exactly.
Psychological is especially nowadays,
is
how we're
scary,
so much
yeah.
more interested in that would work better.
Yeah, and we have countless material to use now, so I completely agree.
That or just go the B-movie route, which I'll support 100%.
Absolutely. You can't beat the late-night movies, right?
No.
Well, I think that's going to conclude our discussion on horror, wouldn't you say?
I'd say so.
Perfect. Well, now everyone be sure to tune in next week, because next week will be our Academy Awards preview show, and after the Academy Awards, the next week we will have our reaction to the Academy Award winner. So you want to make sure to see those shows, or hear those shows rather. You don't want to miss those. So for Real Talk, we're your hosts. I'm Colin Ritter.
I'm Peter Lewis.
Take care.